I'm Beatty Covetos, and welcome again to the Ask Beatty Show. And isn't it the truth, my friend, that regardless whether or not we are rich or poor or black or white or gay or straight or trans or educated or not, the reality is that we all need help from time to time. Of course, what is really, really important, and we are going to be talking about this with my guest, Virginia Brown, Ginny Brown, in a few minutes, how important it is that if we are seeking out help, whether or not it is self-help or psychotherapy help or sexual issue help or legal help or any kind of help, we really, really need to do our research. You know, when I think about it in the mental health area here in this country, more and more people are calling themselves experts. There are dating experts and relationship experts. And, of course, in my field, you have to be certified and you need to have many, many years of education and there's licensing. But in the self-help world, it is a typically very, very unregulated world. So whether or not you are looking for a dentist or a chiropractor, please, please do your homework. And, you know, when I talk about looking for lasting love based on my own research and book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, as unsexy as it is to really, really assess people, assess who this person is or is not, and not just go to the computer and look at the number of likes or look at the number of followers or look just only at the reviews. These days in particular, I think we cannot be too careful who we let into our lives. And when we're discussing the area of psychotherapy and sex therapy, and looking for somebody to talk to, of course, is Lori Gottlieb in her wonderful book, Maybe You Should Talk to Somebody, you know, discusses again. This is something, it's not just for others. I mean, we in the mental health field, we also need good people to talk to. Because look at what's going on in this country. This is pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. There are approximately 350 million people worldwide suffering from depression, and I suspect very, very strongly that since the pandemic, that number has really gone up. And in America, 60 million adults have been diagnosed with depression, which translates into 1 in 5 Americans. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. And if we're looking at divorce, look at what's happening. 48% of couples marrying for the first time ends up in the divorce courts. That number for second marriages, and many, many people are surprised to hear this, is 67%. And what do you think the divorce rate for third marriages is? Well, that number, it's a big number. It's 74%. And of course, when I talk about never making a mistake in love again, it has to do primarily with three things. We need to be okay. We need to learn the ingredients that go into a long-term healthy relationship. And number three, we need to do a great assessment. So I cannot underscore the importance of whether or not you are looking for a lawyer or a doctor or a therapist. We really do need to do our homework. And if we're looking at what's going on with suicide, suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. And since 2011, there has been a 40% increase nationally by self-poisoning by young people. And the rate of suicide, and this is a number that just always blows me away, between the ages of 10, young children, 10 years old to 24, increased by 56%. Homicide rates by intimate partners increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. So we're not doing very well in this country when it comes to our mental health and when it comes to doing really, really accurate and in-depth assessments about the people who we allow into our lives. 4 women are killed every day by their intimate partners. And since the pandemic, everything has been exacerbated. Can I pay my rent? And am I going to be able to put food on the table for my family? What's going to happen to my job? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my business? What if I contract the virus? Do I have health insurance? And if I do, if I'm fortunate enough to have health insurance, is it adequate? Is it going to cover any possible catastrophic illness? And what about social isolation? And it's a really good thing that things are starting to open up. But I know that many, many of my patients have been really having an extraordinarily difficult time without family, without intimate partners, working from home. It's been a particularly challenging time for all of us. The hotlines, the self-help hotlines, and I don't know who's at the end of the hotlines, but I hope that people who are calling the hotlines are getting supportive, empathic responses from the people who are on the other side of the phone. What we've seen is an increase in alcohol consumption in the last number of months. People have been exercising less and eating more. And again, now that summer is really upon us and that things are opening up around the country, that we're going to be taking much, much, much better care of ourselves. But again, the reality is that we all go through a lot of ups and downs in our lives. And what I've been trying to do over the last many years, in fact, today is the 305th Ask Speedy show here on the Progressive Radio Network, is to encourage you and inspire you that if you are finding that your life and your relationship is just really not going in a way that you would like, that you actually give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. And I have to underscore, to do your homework and really, really make sure that the person who you are entrusting your psyche and your life with is somebody who's qualified and somebody who is competent. And I want to give you the call-in number here right now. That number is 888-874-4888. But I have a really wonderful guest today, a very, very brave woman, Ginny Brown, who is a therapist and co-author with her daughter, Jean Brown, of This Sweet Life, How We Lived After Kirby Died. And this is published by the Three Tomatoes publisher. Cheryl Benton, you did a wonderful job in publishing this book. And their book is a poignant story about Kirby Brown's death, Ginny's daughter, at age 38, in a sweat lodge in Sedona, organized by none other than Oprah's New Age guru, James Arthur Ray, an internationally known motivational speaker and author. And Ginny is also a wife, a mother of 4, a mama to 7 grandchildren. Ginny conducts a private mental health practice in Weston, New York, and has provided training and clinical support as a family life educator in the tri-state area in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And following the death of her beloved daughter, Kirby, at a self-help retreat in 2009, the family founded Seek Safety Incorporated, and you really need to check this out, which is a 501c3 charity to educate the public about self-help and promote safe and ethical practices in the industry. And as a result of the international coverage of this tragedy, she has been featured in numerous interviews and media productions in the United States and Canada. And even though Jean Brown, her daughter, was unable to join us today, she is the co-author and she's a writer and mom to two young children. And she is active. She's living in Toronto now. And, of course, you all know that I'm Canadian. Yes, I have dual citizenship. That Jean is active in creating content for Seek's website, social media, brand outreach, and legislative effort. So, Ginny Brown, welcome, welcome to the Ask Beattie Show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Beattie.
Well, Ginny, you're a brave, brave woman, and I know that you haven't always had the best experiences with the media, right?
That's true. That's true.
And, well, I promised you, you know, this is one therapist to another, that this is not going to be a Larry King interview, and this is not going to be an interview where you are going to be invalidated in any way at all. And I want my listeners, I want people to really hear your story. We know that the self-help business is a $10 to $13 billion a year industry, and thousands of attendees pre-pandemic would flood conferences by well-known speakers that we all know, Tony Robbins, Dave Ramsey, to get inspired and create wealth for themselves. So let us begin. First of all, how did you find out, and I know your husband and your daughter, Kirby, you attended a James Arthur Ray motivational seminar. Is that right?
Yes. Kirby lived in the Baja, and she had heard James Ray speak at a very short introductory kind of event that was free, and the audience was encouraged to sign up for a two-day event called Harmonic Wealth, and if you signed up that day, another person could go with you for free, you know, which was right up my alley and Kirby's alley, too.
Of course.
And it was in New Jersey in March of 2009, so she had invited me to go with her. And, at first I was like, oh, I don't know. But I realized, wow, this is great. Spending 2 days with my daughter would be wonderful. So,
right.
So I went, and when we were there, we both kind of decided, gee, this might be good for George to go to as well. You know, a lot of the teaching about being positive and approaching life in a positive way and kind of the combining of Eastern and Western philosophies. He's very good at that. He's an extremely gifted and charismatic speaker. And I thought George would benefit from this as well. My husband has Parkinson's, and one of the effects of Parkinson's is depression. So
right.
It's something both of us are very much aware of, keeping him, in a positive place for his own life. So he went out to California in May of 2009 and attended the same two-day event with Kirby. And it was at that event that she decided to sign up to go to Sedona.
So let me just ask you something. So your husband, George, and you and Kirby, you heard this very charismatic man speak. And what was it? Because how easy it is for all of us to get taken in. I mean, believe me, we've all been through this. What was it about him and what he said and what he stood for that got you to a place where you thought that, and that your daughter thought that this was going to be a really important experience, and I couldn't believe that it was $10,000 for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But was there something that he spoke to you in a way that you thought, aha, this is going to be hopefully helpful to my husband, to myself, and of course to Kirby? You know, again, it is so easy. You hear people all the time. They are endorsing the best cosmetic, the best doctor, the best piece of clothing, the best piece of jewelry. And these days, the influencers, I mean, people are so concerned with which celebrity is going to be endorsing our product, our business. And the reality is, and this was something that I was very, very surprised in learning a couple of years ago, is that you can pay these really big influencers a lot of money, and they will be very happy to take your significant amount of money, and they will endorse you, and they will endorse your products. And I hear this from a lot of people, whether or not they believe in you, whether or not they believe in your product. So again, when it comes to seeking out help of any kind, how careful we must be in really doing our homework. Because, you know, one of the things that, you know, I have written about and I've certainly read about is that if a program or advice is powerful enough to transform our lives for the better, it is powerful enough also to harm us as well. And we're all in certain ways. Jenny, are you back? You know, we're all really looking, you know, to improve the quality of our lives and the relationships. And when you look at commercials on television, you know, this pill is going to help you lose weight with X amount of time. This is the best diet. This is the best mascara. I mean, the advertising industry, I mean, talk about a billion dollar industry. It is so powerful. And I think that for all of us, when we are looking to improve, whether or not it's our home decor or our body or our relationships or anything in our lives, we want to believe that the person who is on the television or the person who is, you know, is on the radio telling us that this is the best product and this is the best vitamin and this is the best possible piece of exercise equipment, that it's true. And, you know, when I talk about my own program, my Rate Your Mate Before It's Too Late, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again program, you know, I talk about how before I did my research and before I wrote the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, that I too, in certain ways, was somewhat naive and somewhat gullible. And prior to all of this, I would, and you've heard me say this many, many times, that I would meet someone, I would, a woman or a man, and I would say, gee, this is a really lovely person, this is a really smart person, this is someone who I think is really trustworthy. And after doing my research And after writing the book, I would never again make that kind of a statement. The best, the very, very best that I could say is that I have met a person who appears to be, and that is the word that is so important, appears to be lovely, appears to be trustworthy, appears to be wonderful, and that I found, of course, in my own research that it takes about a year to really find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. So that I think that there isn't really, there really is not a shortcut for any of us. You know, I'll be watching television, I'll be watching some movies, and the commercials, they are very, very powerful. And especially if you have an Oprah, or you have a Dr. Phil, or you have a Larry King, and they are endorsing products. Or you have a Marie Osmond, you know, talking about her, you know, her diet program. We look at these people and we put them, unfortunately, we put them on a pedestal. And we want to believe, we really want to believe that it's going to be the best product and the best dryer and the best iron and the best and the best. And yet, I think that that's one of the things that's really terrific, about Consumer Reports, where they do some bona fide research in helping us look at the pros and the cons, of particular products and particular services. John, how are we doing with getting Ginny back on the show? Ginny?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. I think we had some issues with connection. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
I know that this cannot be something that's easy for you to be doing.
I think is interesting, listening to you speak, one of the things that was extremely disappointing, I guess I want to say, is that one of the reasons Kirby was so involved and willing to believe James Ray was because he had been really vetted by national media. And Oprah,
yes.
He had been on Oprah a couple of times, and she was very impressed with him. And I think
Go ahead. We'll take the call a little bit later, but I really want to give you, Ginny, an opportunity to really tell your story. Go ahead.
Okay, what I was going to say, when I sat in his seminar, knowing that he had been on Oprah, it never occurred to me that what he was saying about his experience and his training and everything that he had gone through to be able to share this knowledge that he had with his audience, it never occurred to me that he was lying. Because Oprah has a staff to check out somebody, you know? I don't know if I had been sitting in that audience without knowing that he had been all over national media, I think I would have been more skeptical. What I did learn about myself, however, is just what you're saying. We want to believe someone. I am a person. I am not a cynic, and I don't want to be a cynic. I like the fact that I trust people. I like that. I don't want to change that about myself. But there were things that happened there that I should have paid attention to, and I didn't. And I'm thinking, I'm an educated person. I should have known better.
Well, such is what, and I hope, you know, I say this to people all the time, I hope you're not going to blame yourself, and I hope you're not going to beat yourself up. And, you know, it's true, Ginny, that for all of us, although I have to tell you, I've really changed in the last many, many years, when we hear a celebrity like Oprah, and when we hear that so-and-so has been on all these national shows, as you say, we want to believe, but in retrospect, I'm really curious, what was it in retrospect, and of course we're all brilliant in retrospect, what was it that, you know, in thinking back, had you not heard that he'd been endorsed by, you know, all of these major celebrities in the country, what do you think you heard that may today have caused you to pause?
Okay, I think understanding the power of sensory deprivation, understanding the power of the use of neuro-linguistic programming, the fact that he would bring people up on the stage and have them really reveal deeply personal traumas in their life. As a therapist, I know doing that is dangerous. And he didn't release them saying, you need to process this with a professional or blah, blah, blah. I actually went up to someone who had been on stage and said to her, you know, what you shared was deeply personal, and you really, please, you know, when you get home, go to someone with a professional license who really can help you work through this. He did not provide that, and just bringing people up like that, that's a red flag. That's a red flag.
Absolutely.
Looking into the room that was all pumped up with energy and people giving endorsements, the room was super cold. There were periods of time where there was very loud, deafening music. We didn't have a whole lot of time to get lunch and to eat. He had us in the auditorium very late. He was inviting people to get there super early in the morning, kind of telling those that if they didn't show up for the early yoga session, they were kind of slouches. You know, to me, getting my coffee was more important.
Right.
But, you know, those are the kinds of tactics that really create suggestibility in people who might not be very able to be manipulated. I'm very glad that I experienced James Ray, and my husband is very glad that he experienced him too, because it helped us to better understand what happened in Sedona. It helped us to better understand how that manipulation over 5 days and the intensity of the things that they did and the sensory deprivation that all of them experienced would take away their rational decision-making come the last event of the 5-day retreat, which was the sweat lodge. So Kirby is in this sweat lodge, which is a small tent that has a dugout pit in the middle where superheated rocks are put in the pit, and then water is thrown on them to create a sauna-like experience. This is a sacred Native American ritual that he bastardized. He turned it into a heat challenge rather than a sacred ceremony to create healing and resolution for people. So
can I just ask you, when you and George and Kirby, and again, I hope that you are not beating yourself up.
Not at all. I'm not.
I'm so glad to hear that, because, again, in retrospect, we're all brilliant. Did you and your husband and Kirby, did you discuss some of the things that, of course, you as a therapist and your husband, George, as a therapist as well, did you discuss some of the kind of concerns, even though it was endorsed by the celebrity world, or specifically Oprah? Did you have that kind of a conversation amongst yourselves?
We did. You know, I knew that she was anxious to kind of blow out the business. She was a decorative painter in the Baja, and she really wanted to take that to the next level. I also knew that she was unhappy in personal relationships. She really wanted to find her soulmate, and she had chosen poorly, or she felt she had chosen poorly over the years. I talked with her a lot about relationships. I talked with her that summer a lot about this whole concept of the secret, that the law of attraction doesn't make things happen based on how you think.
Yes.
How you think is going to impact the way you see things. So if I'm all filled with anxiety that I'm going to be late for this appointment and I'm not going to find a parking place to get me there on time, the chances are you will not find the parking place and you will drive past the one that's right at the front door.
Right. So true.
So how you think impacts what you experience, but it doesn't create reality, which is what he was saying, and all the people from The Secret are saying about the law of attraction. Your thoughts impact how you see the world. Your thoughts impact your recognition of opportunity, for example, but it doesn't create the opportunity. It just allows you to possibly see it.
Exactly. So you talked amongst yourselves, you know, here and there, you know, maybe this was a little over the top, but Kirby had an agenda, she had goals, and she was in, right? She committed to the $10,000 for five
days. She committed,
days.
And as I said, I didn't realize it was that expensive, or I think I might have challenged her a little bit, but she was ready to buy property in the Baja, and it had recently fallen through. And so she decided, okay, I'm going to invest in myself so that I really can move into a new place in my life. Kirby was a full-on person from the time she was born. And what I realized after this happened, the reason it happened was because she always played full-on. And she took a challenge. And Kirby Brown meeting James Ray, who was getting off on his power over people, as well as the money he was making, was the perfect storm.
Right, exactly. Had you known, I mean, had he described at all what the five-day, in quotes, spiritual warrior seminar was actually going to look like? What was going to go on? I mean, did he talk about it? And I would guess that he probably didn't. The sensory deprivation and the limited sleep, etc.
The introduction to it, I don't think, was very complete. The waiver in very, very tiny print.
There was a waiver.
Probably described more of the activity. Kirby knew there was going to be a vision quest. So she knew there was going to be a period of time where she would be alone in the desert with her own thoughts, probably overnight. And she was very excited about that because she's always been drawn to Native American traditions and indigenous people rituals. So she was very interested and kind of excited about that. She knew that was going to happen. She knew there'd be yoga and there'd be meditation and an opportunity for personal reflection. Kirby was a very physical person. She surfed the big waves on the East Cape of the Baja. She mountain biked. She climbed. She was a horsewoman. She had a horse from the time she was 10 years old on our property here in Westtown. So she responded to a physical experience. So I knew that for her, This kind of thing was kind of up her alley, and this is, you know, what she really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Listen, do you think we should just take a call? We have Cheryl on the phone, and she may have,
sure.
I'm sure, some questions or comments for you and for me. So, Cheryl, hello, and welcome to the Ask Beauty Show, and welcome to joining Ginny Brown and myself, or water. For hours at a time through a series of odd objectives like shaving your head in order to achieve a breakthrough in your thinking. I mean, were these things that he had talked about at all at his intro seminar before everybody, you know, plunked down thousands of dollars?
No. No.
No.
No, he did not talk about head shaving or food and water deprivation, not at all. So I think, you know, you get there, and then he starts in with sleep is overrated. You don't need to sleep. You can sleep when you get home. You've paid a lot of money for this. You know, really play full on and get the most out of this experience. That would appeal to my daughter. That's who she was. So she would go, yeah, I can, you know, I can catch up on my sleep when I get home. I don't think she understood how going for 3 full days, and maybe 4, I don't know, but almost 3 full days without sleep or very, very little sleep, how that would affect her rational decision making. So, you know, in our organization, Seek Safely, that's part of what we're trying to educate people to. If you put yourself in a situation where there's sensory deprivation, you need to understand everyone thinks they're always going to be in control of their decision making. But if you've fallen and you've broken your leg, you're not going to be able to walk, right? So if you put yourself in a position where there's all this sensory deprivation, you're not going to be able to think the same way you thought before that happened to your body. So we're not bigger than our body. Certainly our minds are very powerful. However, there are physical realities that we have to deal with in the physical world we live in.
Exactly. I mean, it certainly was a cult. I mean, my definition of a cult: sensory deprivation, limited sleep, lack of hydration, the breathing exercises, you know, designed to change your brain waves, peer pressure control, NLP, I mean, neuro-linguistic programming, you know, pushing people beyond their comfort zone. I mean, what a scenario for disaster, you know, when you think about this. And when I was reading your book, I mean, really.
I think, Viti, we look at, so what's criminal here? If people were willing to do that, they said yes to it. You know, I mean, this is part of what happened during the trial. But in that tent, when he was told repeatedly that Kirby was in trouble, he did nothing. He did nothing.
So there were people with her that actually approached him and said, listen, this beautiful woman is having troubles. So he completely ignored their pleas for help.
During the trial, people said, they said, she's breathing funny, she's making funny sounds, I think she stopped breathing, she's unconscious. At one point, when James Shore had saved someone, dragged her past James Wright unconscious and actually saved her life, went back to where he was next to Kirby, and at that moment said, we need help back here. And James Wright said, yeah, we'll deal with that at the end.
Wow. I mean, and the fact, I mean, we'll talk about this, you know, in the next couple of minutes, the fact that he was not convicted for murder. I mean, that's what happened. He murdered your daughter.
That's right. He should have been convicted of manslaughter, because I don't think he intended to kill her. I don't think he went into that event planning to end her life. But what he did made death in that tent inevitable. What he had done up to that event and what he did inside that tent, he knew what he was doing was dangerous. People had been harmed in previous years, and he made that tent, the ceremony, longer and hotter than it had ever been before. And he knew from past events that people had gone unconscious. He was warned that people would die if he continued to do this, but the jury never got to hear that.
Really? So that there had been previous retreats that he had conducted where similar kinds of things had happened.
Were
there reports? Were there previous reports from previous participants and their families, or not?
In 2005, someone was taken to the emergency room, had to be rehydrated, has suffered permanent brain damage, and I'm not sure whether there was any kind of resolution for that man other than being convinced that somehow it was his own fault. The next 2 years after that, participants revived other participants who were unconscious and saved their lives.
Did these previous participants, did they report to the police? I mean, were there other families who... No, so everybody was, in a way, they were complicit. Again, not blaming anybody, but they were complicit.
Yes, they were. And I think in many situations, in the manner in which he presented things, he would say, you know, you weren't doing it right, you weren't doing it correctly. I mean, you know, all of this. Yeah. So you come back, you blame the victim. And
you
we know the victim, right? You know, we know from talking to others in the self-help industry that people who are harmed do not come forward. They're embarrassed, they're ashamed when they realize they've been scammed, or they've been convinced that it's their own fault, or if they threatened legal action, they were paid off. And then they
can't.
And we know for a fact that that's happened in a number of places.
Yeah. So, and in reading your book, you know, I learned that there were 18 people of the, you know, who were participating in this retreat with your daughter who ended up going to the hospital, and three of them died as a result. Your daughter Kirby, unfortunately, was one of the victims. So people were not doing well throughout this process.
Right. So a third of the participants, there were approximately 60 people in that tent, was close to 20 that wound up going to, you know, the neighborhood hospitals. They had EMTs there. They had helicopters medevacking people out. And at that point, James Ray went up to his room to shower and have dinner in the midst of that pandemonium.
After you look at those
kinds of behaviors, and when he keeps saying this was a tragic accident and I'm so sorry it happened, you realize this wasn't a tragic accident. You know, when things went wrong, you just disappeared. You never talked to your participants. You and I know when I have a responsibility to my clients. I'm not going to abandon them. I'm not going to walk away. If something happens or goes wrong, I'm going to stand there with them, and I'm going to help them get through it. I'm going to help them process whatever it is. Everyone who was there was traumatized by having gone through this kind of experience. And, you know, my husband had worked with the firefighters after 9/11, and, you know, we're familiar with trauma, and we really wanted to do something for the participants because we knew they were traumatized. There were very few people who would even talk to us afterwards.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean the
participants were not willing.
The participants and their families were not willing to speak with you and George and your family.
Right. Just a handful. And, you know, I understood that. You know, you have survivor's guilt. You have shame. All of those kinds of things. But I knew that everyone who was there needed some help to process what they had been through. And it was really at that point that we shifted our focus from trying to get trauma help for everyone who was there to saying, we just have to educate people about what happens in a situation like this and the potential for danger. And then call upon people in the industry to practice in a more ethical and safe way. Why can't, you know, you talk about a board of ethics for psychotherapy. You know, many of these people have no professional licenses. And the irony is when he gets this ridiculous sentence that he served, you know, 20 months for three deaths, he can go back to the industry because he didn't have a license that would have been taken away from him once he was declared a felon.
Tell me, were you and your family the only family who took legal action against him?
There were 17 people on a lawsuit against James Ray after this happened. So it was the other two families who were involved, the Newmans and the Shores, and then a number of people who had been sustained physical injury and had hospital bills that they couldn't pay. What happened was once he was arraigned, well, that the right
term?
The jury, once the grand jury said, you know, the charge was manslaughter, and they started to do a forensic accounting to determine bail, he came up as indigent. The man who had made $10 million the year before and spouted that from the stage suddenly had no money, had nothing. Yeah. So the 17 people had to settle for his underinsured insurance policies.
Good heavens. Tell me, the jury, you kind of wonder what was wrong with the jury. Did you have good lawyers? Of course, we know that lawyers, good lawyers, can do all kinds of things to get some of the most disgusting human beings off. I mean, what happened, Ginny?
What happened was the jury was not able to hear about prior events. So it was
why? Why weren't they able to hear about the pattern of behavior?
The pattern was not allowed by the judge because that was considered prejudicial. His business practices and prior behaviors were deemed to be prejudicial and could not be admitted. The prosecutor, Sheila Polk, did an amazing job of trying to get as much information as she could in front of the jury, but her hands were tied by by the laws of discovery and the legal situation. It was extremely frustrating to sit there knowing so much more than the jury was being heard, being told. The lawyers that he had engaged, okay, a high-powered law firm from L.A. with, I don't know, 40 or 60 associates or something, all they did throughout the trial was pepper the judge with motions for mistrial over and over and over again. That prosecutor spent most of the trial defending her right to prosecute James Ray.
Really?
There was so much information that it was difficult for her to even get in front of the judge because she's fighting for the right to even be in court prosecuting him. It was unbelievable. And I was so shocked. And at one point, my nephew, who's a lawyer and had handled was involved with the group that had to create a settlement for everyone, Bob Magnanini, said to me, "Aunt Ginny, you have entered a court of law, not a court of justice."
Yes, clearly.
This is not about justice. This is about applying the law. These are high-powered lawyers who will pull out anything they can to try to confuse the jury, to try to obfuscate the truth, and that's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh. Did you have, and I'm sure that you did, medical experts who just looking at the process of what went on in terms of the sensory deprivation and the limited sleep and the lack of hydration, and you know, the list goes on and on. Were there experts who were able or who were there to say this was a disaster just waiting to happen? Was anybody there to say that, from the medical profession?
Well, one of the things that happened was there was so much confusion on the autopsy reports because they used different language. And then all the people that were brought to area hospitals, those medical reports were confusing because they had never seen this before and they didn't know what was going on and what happened. So in the end, if you read through all those reports as a medical person, you would see, they all said it was heat stroke. People were having organ failure because of heat stroke and heat exhaustion. However, these lawyers were able to so manipulate the language and to so manipulate those coroners when they were on the stand that they created massive confusion.
Uh-huh. So the jury, they didn't get it. They were not able to get the real information that would have helped you and all the families get the proper verdict.
That's right.
Yeah, isn't it amazing what, in quote, expert, high-powered lawyers, manipulative lawyers are able to do to get people like James Arthur Ray off the hook?
So it's another example of disparity in this country, right? If you have money and you can afford those lawyers, you can get yourself out of jail, right?
Look, we see this all the time. We see this every day with our president. You know, we won't go there right now, but of course. So he ultimately went to prison for negligent homicide on three counts, served only 20 months, and is back in business.
He's back in business. What's amazing to me is that CNN did a documentary on him called Enlighten Us, which basically is kind of a little bit of like an infomercial for him. I mean, he makes statements in that documentary that you would hope people hear and go, oh, my gosh, this guy is a little off the wall. But ultimately, it was very sympathetic to him, and it really, you know, omitted a tremendous amount of information. I had met with the director, and again, I'm naive and very trusting. It never occurred to me that our discussion wasn't going to be a part of what was recorded in that documentary, and of course it was not. The victims were barely mentioned, and he was filmed crying on stage, having lost his three good friends, and then says, well, Sedona had to happen so that I could suffer and learn how to overcome adversity so that now I can teach you how to overcome adversity in your life.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been quite a documentary. You know, as I'm sitting here, Ginny, I know a really fantastic man who does the most amazing documentaries, Doug Block. I mean, he's been in the business forever. He is a real mensch. And, you know, if you and your family are interested, you know, I'll be very, very happy to make an introduction, because it sounds like the story, the real story, has yet to be told.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing. It was one of the reasons why we felt compelled to write the book.
Five minutes. Okay, Ginny, go ahead.
I wanted people to know who Kirby is, because she's no longer physically here. And I wanted people to know that there's danger in this industry, but not to give up on growing or seeking or expanding your life, but just be really careful about where you go, who you pay attention to, and what it is you believe. So we wanted to write this book. What's interesting is Oxygen just did a terrific expose on what happened in Sedona, and it's called, it was the first episode of their Deadly Cult series. And Wondery has just put out a 6-episode podcast called Guru, which tells the real story. So,
And then you and your family have founded Seek Safety, which is a 501c3 charity to educate the public about the self-help industry, which, of course, is still to this day almost entirely unregulated.
That's right. And we're encouraging people. So the name is Seek, S-E-E-K, Safely, so that our journey is safe, making sure that you are given the respect that you deserve, that your practitioner is truthful and accurate and protective, operates with integrity, and is safe. And if you're putting yourself in a situation that you're willing to take a risk, they have a risk management plan. I mean, that's
exactly
what we see. We're a very safety-conscious country, but this industry has no protection for people.
No, for sure. Listen, I cannot believe that almost an hour has come and gone. I want to thank you so, so much, Ginny Brown, for, you know, agreeing to come on the show. I hope this has been a much better experience than you had on Larry King Live and on some of the other media shows that you have, you know, participated on. And listen, if there's anything at all that I can do to help, I hope that you will let me know. And I, you know, whatever it is that you would want, and whatever it is that I would be able to do, I'm all in on this. And
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And if you ever want to call a fellow dual citizen Canadian, feel free to call Jean. She would.
Yes,
be,
I know. We're going to definitely be in touch.
You.
And I look forward to meeting you face-to-face someday. I guess we could meet on Zoom, but again, thank you so much. Thank you for your honesty, your openness, your bravery, and much love, okay, and much peace to you and your husband and your family. And let's keep
so
in
much.
Touch.
And we're hoping that people will go on Amazon and read our full story, Seek This Sweet Life. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, everybody, that was Ginny Brown, the co-author with her daughter, Jean Brown, of This Sweet Life, How We Lived After Kirby Died, and how careful we all have to be who we allow into our lives. You know, I was going to talk about a piece that I wrote, Is Your Therapist Helping or Harming You? But we can talk about that next week. And again, I want to thank you so much all for listening to the show over the last number of years. And of course, you know that I am with you here live every Monday afternoon from 3 to 4. Keep the emails and the tweets and the comments and, the phone calls, you know, coming in. And, I wish all of you, a good rest of the day, and we're going to end with my favorite ending song to the Ask Beattie Show, which is What the World Needs Now.